Tonight, they became the gates to hell. Suicide bombings have claimed numerous lives.
ISIS has claimed responsibility for the attack there in Afghanistan.
August 26th, 2021, Kabul Airport. One of the deadliest terrorist attacks in Afghanistan. ...169 Afghans lost their lives in a terrorist attack at two gates, Karzai International Airport. This attack exactly coincided with the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Afghanistan. This deadly attack is just one example of the massacres that terrorists committed in Afghanistan. This bloodbath will never end. America's Response Monument in New York City, a statue of an American soldier on horseback. Many people think that this statue is related to the American Civil Wars in the 19th century or to World War II, but surprisingly, it is related to the 21st century and the presence of American troops in Afghanistan.
And there's a picture of them on horseback.
But why U.S. Special Forces rode horses in Afghanistan? These soldiers were actually security forces from the CIA and the Pentagon, who, in the early days of the occupation of Afghanistan, were responsible for providing intelligence support to the Afghan proxy forces, along with carrying out airstrikes. He gradually started small uprisings against the occupying forces. In 2006, the Taliban could retake control of significant parts of Afghanistan thanks to irregular warfare campaigns, a process that continued year after year. They thought about negotiations with some of Mullah Muhammad Omar's deputies after the failure of conventional wars against the Taliban and the increase in the West's military expenses. The New York Times, in an article published on June 19, 2017, explained in detail who exactly supported Mullah Abdul Manan Niazi. This article suggested the Afghan intelligence agency paid each member of this group salaries equivalent to $150 to $300 a month to fight against the Taliban and Afghanistan's neighbors. The entrance of foreign terrorists into Afghanistan was accompanied by the revelations of the former deputy of the Afghan parliament, Abdulzahir Qadir. Abdulzahir Qadir was one of Fazal Hadi Muslim Yar's old friends. Fazal Hadi Muslim Yar was the head of Afghanistan's Senate. Abdulzahir Qadir referred to the transfer of Daesh terrorists from the south of Afghanistan to the north of the country, quoting the words of the former head of the Senate. In this regard, there were many reports of the resignation of the officials of some provinces. The governors of provinces like Paktia and Khost, and the most important resignation was that of Salim Khan Qunduzi, the governor of Nangarhar province, to which the ARG's authorities had no response. But Abdulzahir Qadir knew the reason for this silence. The cooperation of Afghan security organizations with Daesh terrorists was the answer to the puzzle. The remaining Daesh forces and their families were transported by Afghan government helicopters to the Dar Zab rural district and government security bases in Shebelghat. Daesh terrorists sought refuge with Afghan government to avoid being captured by the Taliban. There were important figures among these terrorists. Molavi Habib al-Rahman was one of the Daesh's commanders in northern Afghanistan. After taking refuge with the Afghan government, he surprisingly said that he was tired of the war and wanted to live like a normal citizen. Mufti Namatullah Kawin was one of the Daesh commanders in Jawzjan. He came to Kabul in 2015 and gained access to governmental facilities. He stayed in Saudi Arabia for a short time and then returned to Jawzjan. Afterwards, he started the war against the Taliban with the support of the government. Like Molavi Habib al-Rahman, Mufti Lamatullah Kawim lost the battle against the Taliban and sought refuge with the Afghan government. He later said that he wanted to live a peaceful life like a normal person. As the New York Times stated, Daesh terrorists were guests of the Afghan government as if nothing happened. Mufti Nematullah Kawim and Molavi Habib al-Rahman carried out numberless terrorist attacks in Jawzjan, Herat, and Kabul. Amaq news agency linked to Daesh terrorists broadcasted all these terrorist operations. Despite all of these explanations, these two terrorists did not face trial and were released. Mufti Nematullah Kawim had the support of the Afghan government before he started the Daesh operations in Jawzjan. In 2014, he met with Abdulrashid Dostum, former vice president of Afghanistan. The second man of the country met with one of the Daesh commanders in northern Afghanistan. Since 2001, Abdulrashid Dostum was America's man in the war against the Taliban. In the years after, he remained an American warlord in Afghanistan. Of course, he welcomed a new player, Daesh, in Afghanistan. Here, we come to understand Zahir Qadir's claims about the ties between the Afghan government and the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group. Hamdullah Mohib, as the last national security advisor in the 20-year government of Afghanistan, made only a simple apology about the crimes that were carried out against Afghans over the years.
I was talking to the Afghan people in this case because I know it's that anything that is related to my failures, I take full responsibility for and apologize for it.
In this situation, the Taliban fought against the Daesh terrorists and could defeat them. But on the other hand, the Afghan government did nothing but support the terrorists. General John Nicholson, the former commander of the American forces in Afghanistan, confirmed this fact.
The Taliban are fighting Islamic State, and the Afghan government is not fighting Islamic State, and that therefore there could be a spillover of this group into the region.
Daesh Takfiri terrorists were the best opportunity to engage the Taliban, the longtime enemy of Ashraf Ghani's government. The Taliban's sworn enemy was Daesh-K.
The Taliban and ISIS-K are sworn enemies. And in fact, over the last 5 or 6 years, since the emergence of ISIS-K, the fight has actually been between the Taliban and ISIS-K, with the Taliban taking most of the territory that ISIS-K sought to hold on to in Afghanistan.
We can elaborate on a very complicated relationship between the Afghan government and Daesh-K. From 2020 onwards, the number of Daesh attacks increased in Afghanistan, and these countless attacks coincided with the emergence of a new leader of this terrorist group. The new leader was Sanaullah Ghaffari, also known as Shabab al-Muhajir. CBS News published his identity card. Unexpectedly, he was a special guard of Amrullah Saleh, the former national security advisor. A special guard in the Afghan government became the leader of Daesh Khorasan in a short period of time. Amrullah Saleh stylized the case and tweeted, "Sanaullah Ghaffari was an active member of the Haqqani network since 2015 and is from Pakistan." But Sanaullah Ghaffari's passport showed he was born in Kabul and had an Afghan passport from 2016 to 2021. Shahab al-Muhajir was an example of the government's security forces, who, according to Haji Abdul Zahir Qadir, appeared among Daesh-K forces with an identification card. Afghan security personnel were trained by the Americans to join Daesh terrorist group and fight against the Taliban because they were the strongest group fighting the Taliban in Afghanistan.
There are recent reports that U.S.-trained former Afghan security personnel are joining ISIS-K because they are the strongest group still fighting the Taliban.
The Taliban was the only group that had attacked U.S. bases the most.
Holy shit, get that bunker quick.
The Taliban had caused the greatest damage to the American invaders. According to the Los Angeles Times, in addition to supporting the Daesh terrorists, the security institutions of Ashraf Ghani's government directly engaged in silent assassinations of influential figures. Vahid Mujdeh was one of the most important figures in Afghanistan. He had serious criticisms regarding the presence of the Americans and their affiliated government in Afghanistan. On November 20, 2019, Vahid Mujdeh was assassinated by two unknown persons while going to the mosque. Other political analysts were targeted as well, but they ended in failed assassinations. There are failed assassination attempts on people like Hassan Haghyar, Nazir Muhammad Mutmain, and Khairullah Shinwari. The assassination of moderate religious clerics among Shia and Sunni Muslims was another terrorist project of the Afghan National Security. Clerics like Muhammad Ayaz Niazi, who was a university professor, and Khatib Atwazir Akbar Khan Mosque in Kabul continuously criticized the Daesh attacks and the presence of U.S. forces. Niazi lost his life on June 2, 2020, in a suicide bombing at Masjid Wazir Akbar Khan. Mulawi Aziz Allah Mufle was Khatib at mosque and a member of the Afghan National Council of Ulema. Aziz Allah Najafi was one of the prominent clerics of Herat in western Afghanistan who was assassinated by unknown armed men. Maulawi Abdul Samad Muhammadi was the head of Takhar's Ulema Council that lost his in a magnetic bomb blast. Maulawi Abdul Basir Haqqani was the head of Kabul's Ulema Council who was assassinated in the same city. Or the assassination of Abdul Qayyum Ansari, former head of the Shia Ulema Council of Kunduz. Of course, these actions were carried out along with dozens of terrorist operations that killed people in the name of Daesh. At the end of 2021, it became crystal clear the same person who expressed his condolences to the Afghan people after every bloodshed was behind these crimes. Inefficiency and weakness of the Afghan government brought about its failure in the fight against Daesh terrorist group.
The Taliban against Islamic State, especially in the Northwest, where they credited Taliban essentially crushing the Islamic State in the Northwest. Taliban who defeated the Islamic State in the region. Of course, the presence were not as strong as the Northeast, but it was significant at one point.
Why did the U.S. and the former government of Afghanistan prepare the grounds for terrorist operations and create a false image of this country? In this conspiracy, if any person wore Afghan local clothes and grew a beard, was a terrorist and should have been prosecuted, but the result was the free activity of real terrorists in Afghanistan. These terrorists did not care about any ethnic groups in Afghanistan and only carried out suicide bomb attacks. These suicide bomb attacks killed both Shia and Sunni Muslims. These attacks only fill the cemeteries of Afghanistan. Terrorist priority is to destabilize neighboring countries. Abdulmanan Niazi considered his first duty to fight against Afghanistan's neighbors. The extremist forces of the countries surrounding Afghanistan form the main body of the Daesh terrorist group. These groups made Afghanistan their bastion to carry out separatist and terrorist movements in their own countries, from Central Asian countries. To Xinjiang, China.
Status of ETIM and attacks from Afghan territory.
It was considered a security threat to the member countries of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. For this reason, as the Anadolu Agency stated, it is expected the member countries of this organization and the Taliban want the permanent withdrawal of Americans from Afghanistan because the presence of U.S. forces increased the number of terrorist attacks in these countries.
The Shanghai Cooperation Organization, and specifically the four countries, and this is not my analysis, this is the analysis that I get from Russians, Chinese, and others. The four countries that have the most influence on the ground in Afghanistan are Pakistan, Iran, Russia, and China. What they had in common was wanting the United States military to leave.
On the other hand, there was the issue of American military bases in Afghanistan with the aim of fighting terrorism. Under the pretext of the presence of Daesh terrorists in Afghanistan, the United States signed an agreement with the Afghan government in 2014, which increased the number of American troops and their deployment in Afghanistan. But the fact was proven in these years was that the United States wanted to have military bases around countries such as China, Russia, and Iran because of its disputes with those three. The U.S. wanted to set strategic pressure on these countries. The special geography of Afghanistan was the best opportunity for the U.S. to achieve its goal. So the United States implemented its strategies by military presence and the occupation of Afghanistan.
Many people look to the U.S. in the region as a possible counterweight to Russian influence and even to Chinese influence.
This is why the Bagram Air Base is located only 500 miles from the borders of China and Iran. So the United States achieved its desire by invasion and military presence in Afghanistan.
About Bagram Airfield, and I pointed out that having a major air base within 500 miles of both the Iranian and Chinese borders would be a very strategically invaluable.
They invaded Afghanistan by the old slogan of fighting terrorism.
The use of Afghanistan as a terrorist base of operations.
The United States went to war in Afghanistan against these terrorists.
We are killing terrorists.
Resurgence of terrorism in Afghanistan.
Terrorism in Afghanistan.
Fought terrorism in Afghanistan.
Goal of fighting terrorism in Afghanistan.
Their promise to fight terrorism brought about contradictory results. The number of casualties and terrorist attacks increased during the years of U.S. military presence in Afghanistan. But according to New Lines Institute's report, in the short time of the Taliban rule in Afghanistan,
terrorist attacks have decreased significantly compared to the past. The Taliban established the Islamic Emirate in Afghanistan with complications, and they have a long journey to bring stability with their white flag. They hope that peace will return one day to Afghanistan.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech on iRab English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Husseini Qumi. Stay tuned. Defending one's rights is very important. There are some terms like patience and forbearance or asceticism which are sometimes distorted in meaning. For instance, asceticism or piety or zuhd does not mean to have a solitary life or be away from people and society. Also, it doesn't mean to only worship and live working and earning a life. The best example is Imam Ali alayhi salam, who was the most pious person of his time, but at the same time, he was working hard for his living. Imam Ali alayhi salam was famous for his gardening and agricultural works in Medina. He was also the best worshipper of Allah.
به تعبیر قرآن، به تعبیر امیر مؤمنان فرمودن از زهد و بین کلمتین. قرآن تفسیر کرد.
Then Imam Ali alayhi salam explained the meaning of piety and asceticism. In his words, true asceticism is based on two meanings. One is when you may not grieve for what escapes you, and the other is when you may not boast for what comes your way. This sentence of Imam Ali alayhi salam is based on Ayah 23 of Surah Al-Hadid. In better words, piety means not grieving for what you lose and not becoming proud for what you earn. Also, piety means to work hard for living and be among the people. Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRib English Radio Color Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hojatul Islam Hosseini Homi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com/en/Color Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
If you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Protests have been held across the European Union against soaring inflation and a rising cost of living caused by West sanctions imposed on Russia. Thousands of protesters took to the streets in some of the EU's major capital cities, calling on the authorities to take measures and lift Russian sanctions. Another demand of the European demonstrations is the withdrawal of their country from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO. They say that NATO's proxy war on Ukraine and its expansionist policies are the source of most of the problems that member states are facing now. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some world media for further details. Stay tuned, please. Sputnik News Agency reported several thousand protesters assembled outside the Reichstag, a historic government building in Berlin that houses the lower house of the German parliament, to show their disapproval of the government's policies and calling on authorities to lift sanctions against Russia. The demonstration held under the banner Our Country First was staged by the opposition right-wing Alternative for Germany AfD party. The participants blamed the government for rampant prices, inadequate social policies, and call for sanctions on Russian oil and gas supplies to be lifted. Some activists could be seen waving German and Russian flags and carrying posters that said, "I want Russian gas and oil, and those who remain silent today will freeze tomorrow." Others were holding signs both in German and in Russian. In September, the AfD party announced its protest campaign to express dissatisfaction with a sharp increase in food and energy prices in Germany and demand an end to the economic war, the lifting of anti-Russian sanctions and commissioning of the Nord Stream 2 gas pipeline. The first protests were held in the German cities of Leipzig and Magdeburg, among others, and gathered several thousand people. Western countries have increased sanctions pressure on Russia since the start of the special operation in Ukraine. Disruption in supply chains has led to higher fuel and food prices across the EU, driving inflation to record levels and causing the cost of living to soar. France24.com wrote, "Thousands of protesters have gathered in Paris to call for an end to France's membership in the US-led NATO, chanting, 'Let's get out of NATO.'" The demonstrators also protested against the high costs of living. They demanded that President Emmanuel Macron resign, calling on his government to stop supplying arms to Ukraine. On Wednesday, October 5th, French far-right leader Marine Le Pen stated that if she won the presidency, she would once again leave the military command of the US-led alliance. Ever since the Ukrainian crisis began, causing a severe energy crisis across Europe, anti-NATO sentiments have been rising among the Europeans. In France, petrol pumps have been running dry as workers' strike continues in the refineries of the major French oil companies. The strike, staged by France's hard-left CGT union at refineries of ExxonMobil and TotalEnergies, was originally intended to last 3 days, but it has now entered its 13th day. A CGT representative said it is continuing everywhere, adding that there had been no contact from TotalEnergies since recent call by the union for the company's bosses to start wage negotiations. On Friday, October 7th, riders faced the crunch as hundreds of meters long queues crawled out of petrol stations across the country, causing frustrations and long waits for commuters. Energy Minister Agnès Pannier-Runacher claimed in a statement, "The government is doing its utmost to restore the situation to normal as soon as possible." According to the French Energy Ministry, around 20.7% of service stations experienced difficulties on Saturday, October 8, compared with 19% the day before. Out of the total 6 refineries, there are currently not operating, cutting the production by 60%, equaling to 740,000 barrels of petrol a day, and affecting nearly one-third of the petrol stations across France. The workers who have staged a strike are demanding for a pay increase against a backdrop of a cost-of-living crisis and soaring profits in the energy industry. According to reports, the northern France region, mainly the northern Hauts-de-France region and Île-de-France around Paris, are the places most affected by the strikes. Press TV's website explains more about this story, saying multiple rallies also took place in the capital of the Czech Republic on Saturday, October 8. Protesters gathered in Prague's Wenceslas Square in protest of government's incapability to address the crushing cost of living and the downgrade in living standards. Italians, mostly union and party members, but also some local residents, also protested against the rising cost of living, inflation, and energy tariff in the country and denounced the lack of government action to help the less well-off. Last month, Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban called for a ceasefire to end the Russia-Ukraine conflict and said the sanctions had backfired and was dealing a blow to Europe's economy. Orban said in an interview with the local public radio, "Initially, I thought we had only shot ourselves in the foot, but now it is clear that the European economy has shot itself in the lungs and it is gasping for air." Orban has insisted that EU leaders should reconsider their strategy, as sanctions have caused widespread harm to the European economy without weakening Russia or helping resolve the month-long conflict. Since the beginning of Russia's military operation in Ukraine, Western countries have increased sanctions pressure on Russia. Disruption in supply chains has led to higher fuel and food prices across the EU, driving inflation to record levels and causing cost of living to soar. But due to the EU's over-reliance on Russian gas, anti-Russian sanctions have caused more damage to EU citizens than they did to Russia, and as EU governments struggle to find alternatives to Russian oil, the masses are taking to the streets to voice their opposition to NATO's proxy war in Ukraine.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Din al-Islam, din al-Azam, ghayru dini, Muhammad il-Hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God. Welcome to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. Going to talk about some of the Islamic laws about medical issues and conditions according to Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography and we'll be back. Don't go away.
A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtada Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Sheikh Javid, you know, since we are talking about the, you know, some of the Islamic laws about medical issues, let me ask you this question at the beginning of this episode. Is it permissible for the women to use contraceptives without the, you know, her husband's permission?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, according to His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, using contraceptives without the permission of the husband is problematic. It is a matter of objection. And therefore, she needs the consent and permission of her husband, in order to use the contraceptives.
Mm-hmm. I see. The next question that I would like to ask you, Sheikh Shavit, is about the vasectomy. This is one of those operations that, you know, let's say men would go under knife about. And a man, for example, with four children, you know, underwent one of these operations, vasectomy, without the consent of his wife. Well, is there any need actually for the husband to take the permission from his wife? Is he guilty for not obtaining his wife's approval?
Well, generally speaking, the permissibility of going under an operation of vasectomy does not depend on the consent of the wife.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, a man can go ahead using the vasectomy as a contraceptive to avoid impregnating his wife or avoid having further children, because he has already got four children, and of course he can stop at any moment having any more children. And of course, one of the methods for one of the contraceptive methods is vasectomy, which a man can choose to have at any time without even getting his wife's approval.
I see. Okay, and the next question I would like to ask you, Sheikh Javid, is about, some of these methods of contraceptives that we started talking about, and by saying, for example, or asking you a question about the vasectomy, you know, is it permissible for a healthy woman for whom pregnancy is not harmful, all right?
Yes.
To use any of the contraceptives such as coitus interruptus, the diaphragm, the pill, and the sterilization. So is it permissible for a healthy woman, in fact, to use any of these methods of contraceptives? And also, is it permissible for the husband to force to make his wife actually use any method other than the coitus interruptus?
Well, in itself speaking, there is no problem in doing contraception by way of coitus interruptus. Generally speaking, it is permissible for a woman to use all kinds of contraceptives, all methods of contraception. As we said earlier, the husband's consent is very important. When it comes to a healthy woman for whom, of course, pregnancy is not harmful, she can use contraceptives. And, of course, both the husband and the wife can use contraceptives, one of the methods of contraception or one of the contraceptive methods is coitus interruptus, which means that the man ejaculates outside the vagina. And that is, of course, a practice that used to exist long time ago in the early period of Islam, because there are questions as to whether this practice of contraception is allowed or not, and was it ever practiced during the time of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, or not. Of course, there are narrations, authentic traditions, which quite clearly suggest that this action and this method of this contraceptive method is quite permissible. And of course, there's no objection also to resorting to any other method apart from this coitus interruptus. All kinds of methods are allowed, provided that it is not harmful and it is reversible. That's also very much important there are couples that are childless couples.
Yeah.
And of course, in the long run, if they continue to have no children, they will face difficulties, because a childless couple usually end up in separating from each other or getting a divorce, and that will be a huge problem. So the family will disintegrate. Therefore, the religious authorities have clearly stated that the contraceptive must be reversible. Reversible. So in any time, at any moment, if one of the parties wants to reverse or get back to the same, to the previous mode, he or she could do it. So, and of course, when a woman wants to use contraceptives, it's kind of necessary that she get her husband's consent and permission. And of course, using contraceptives must not involve any haram actions such as touching and, of course, looking at the private part. Otherwise, this is not permissible. Of course, when it comes to the last part of your question, because you said that...
Let me interrupt you here actually for a short break, and we'll be back for your answer to the next part of my question. Thank you very much. Just stay with us with the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio.
لا إله إلا الله والله أكبر.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available. including practical laws of Islam, frequently asked questions, comparative fatwa, and newly asked questions.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. This is Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about the medical issues according to the fatwas of Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, you were continuing along the same line as the question posed. So I asked you that, is it permissible for the husband to force his wife, actually, to use any of these methods, such as, or other than the coitus interruptus?
The husband has no right to force his wife to go for any of these contraceptive methods, because it's not within his right to force her to become either pregnant or to stop becoming pregnant.
Mm.
It is a matter of choice.
Yeah, and between the family.
Yeah, and of course the wife can choose not to become pregnant,
right,
or to become pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So the wife and the husband actually has no right to impose his wishes on his wife. That's it.
I see. And you very quickly and briefly mentioned, the questionability of such irreversible methods of contraception. I would like to ask you about the vasectomy. Is it, something illegal? Because it looks like it's irreversible, right?
Yeah, a vasectomy, as far as I know, there are two types of it. It can be reversible. It mm-hmm. can be irreversible. There is a very strong possibility that the tie can be untied,
mm-hmm.
and then the tube. It's a kind of I don't know. I'm not sure if it's a kind of tube tied, with something, and the doctors know better. Because they are the ones who...
They're specialists.
Yeah, they are the specialists, of course. So some doctors have said that it is irreversible, and others have said that it is not. But in the event that it is reversible,
uh-huh.
of course, as it is the case, usually the case, they have said. And depending also on the age and, of course, the age of the couple, sometimes mm-hmm. it may not be reversible. So in the event that the couples have children,
right.
and it is irreversible, even if they do not have children, then there is no objection to the couple having this any kind of these contraceptives method.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid, for your nice answers to the questions. And thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio, Coming up is the news.